Pass to Garrett Green, and Green's going to wind up and throw it back the other way. It's caught at the 10. It's a touchdown, USC. Garrett Green, a former high school quarterback, throws to Desmond Reed, the senior, and the Trojans are on the board with a little razzle-dazzle. It's 13-0. How do you do?
Hey, USC fans, it's time to get into the game with the Peristyle Podcast. Every week, you can get your Trojan football fix as the USCFootball.com staff brings you the latest on the USC football team and the inside scoop on recruiting. And now, here are your hosts of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher Ryan Abraham and the coach, Harvey High.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, joined again by Harvey Hyde. How's it going, Coach?
Hey, I'm always doing good, buddy. I'm ready to go talk a little football, huh?
Yeah, so this is episode 4 of the podcast, and as always, you can find us on uscfootball.com, or if you have iTunes, you want to download the podcast to your iPod, just do a search for USC or Peristyle Podcast from the iTunes store, and you can find us. And last week, we talked about some of the positions on offense with you, Coach. And one we left off is the offensive line. So maybe we should start off with some of the big guys. They have to replace 4 starters on the line.
Yeah, you know, Ryan, this is really going to be a big challenge for the USC offense because the key of any offense is the offensive line. I think they have great athletes playing on the offensive line. And then fortunately, and I mean just because Sam Baker and some of the others got hurt last year, some of the younger players got a lot of experience. They certainly demonstrated that they can play.
There's a few guys that have starting experience just because of the guys that were out, you know.
You're exactly right, Ryan. And I think that will help this team as far as bringing in a new starting group, a combination of players that are going to have to work together well early because of the 2 opening games. They're not easy football games. And when you play like Virginia at Virginia, you can't be jumping off sides with the noise and so on. You can't be beating yourself. You've got to get the rhythm of the quarterback and learn his cadence and so on. I have confidence in him and confidence in the guy next to you and being able to get a feel of looking at him and recognizing defenses and going through blocks and so on. We're really not talking to each other or communicating with each other, but recognizing what you have to do. So I think it's going to be important that this spring at USC, the offensive line really molds together because USC and Ohio State, the second game of the year, is going to be a real battle, and that game is going to be won in the trenches. As you know, Ohio State has played great defense over the last couple of years, and again, they should have another great defensive football team and some great defensive linemen. So these offensive young players are going to really be challenged on the offensive line. And I think what they have to do is find a combination of who fits in well, yet I think they have to look at some of the new players coming in. But as I mentioned earlier, I don't think a lot of the young players, the young offensive linemen, will fit in and start early in the year or play much early in the year because of the stiff competition that the Trojans have in the early part of this season. So I think that the players that they have on campus in the offensive line can be a real solid, great offensive line because I really think they really played well. But in the spring, they're going to have to decide who their top 6 or 7 guys are, rotate them around, teach them different positions. So if someone gets hurt, they can move someone over as they did last year with Jeff Byers when he had to play center a little bit and so on. But I thought Butch Lewis last year filling up in for Sam Baker, I really thought he played well. I really did. He blocked well. He's a big guy. He's got quick feet. So I think, you know, he won't replace Sam Baker early, but he has potential of being a good football player, and I think he'll do that. Jeff Byers, well, what can we say? He should get better every year, returning after starting
this past year. He's the veteran leader now, yeah.
He's the guy. He's the guy, and he's got to lead this team. So, you know, you've got Lewis and Byers, and then at center, you know, 2 years ago, the top offensive lineman in the country at center, O'Dowd, will be coming back. And if you remember, he got a couple of starts this last year and played a lot of football. So
when you talked about communication, that was one thing that I talked in the locker room with some of the guys at the Nebraska game O'Dowd had to go in there and play. And, you know, people talked about the communication. You know, he was a true freshman playing in that game. What kind of goes on? You don't really think about communication when you're talking about the offensive line. What do they have to communicate, especially at the center position? And something O'Dowd did really well, apparently, in that game.
Well, what you have to do is you have to be able to make the calls, recognize the strong side from the weak side, be able to know by alignments of the defense on what possibly could happen as far as this is a defense or a front that they like to stunt from, or you got to be careful of a cross charge. You're more or less in the middle. See, you've got to make the calls in the middle of the line, but the right tackle can't make the call, or the left guard can't make the call because they can't hear the call across the line of scrimmage. So you usually come out and you say odd, strong right, or you come out and you say even, strong left, or you make different calls to sort of communicate between your both sides of the offensive line. So it has to be the center in most of the cases because he's the one that has the best view of everything that's going on. And, of course, the quarterback is behind the center, so he's listening to the center making his calls, and then he can start his audibleizing and so on after they've made their communication of what's going on. And then sometimes after he audibleizes or makes a call on the line of scrimmage to quarterback, then again that center has to come back and make calls if necessary so that they all communicate and someone doesn't run through the line of scrimmage, you know, unblocked. So it's really important that they get this combination and this feeling together, and they work a lot together this spring. You know, and Thomas Herring, I think, is an outstanding player. I think he's going to probably start. I would assume he would be moved to right guard. I'm just assuming this. I'm not saying he would, because you want to get your most experienced players on the field, and he got some playing this past year. Also, I think Charles Brown will probably take Radovich's place at the strong side, and Charles is a big, fast, young player. So I think they've got great talent in the offensive line, and they have more experience than what you might think, because these players all played last year. Not a lot, but they played. And as sophomores playing or redshirt freshmen playing, that really does bring a lot to the offensive line. You know, you look at the offensive line this year, and, you know, the senior guy is Jeff Byers. It's one senior on the whole offensive line. Yet they're going to go against Virginia early in the year and Ohio State's defense the second game of the year. So if that offensive line isn't playing great football or up to their potential, it doesn't make any difference what the running backs or the quarterbacks or the receivers are doing. But they've got to block those defensive fronts.
Yeah, you're right. And I think there's so much young talent there with experience. And the funniest guy probably is Chris O'Dowd, who's going to come in as a redshirt freshman but still has three starts under his belt. And he started at Nebraska. And when we're talking about the communication, sometimes they had to do communication between the linemen with hand signals. So he came in and did an amazing job right away. So I don't think USC is going to miss much of a beat with him at the center position. And like you talked about, there's going to move some guys around and see who fits out where, and it's going to be an interesting spring on the offensive line. So let's
No, it really is. Yeah, it is going to be. And I think it's going to be great watching these kids mature and who's playing where.
Yeah. All right. So let's that's it for the offense. And let's look on the defensive line. The other big guys on, you know, you got to replace a few big names: Cedric Ellis, Lawrence Jackson. You know, Feely Moala is coming back, and he's, you know, a potential superstar there. And you have a couple defensive ends, Everson Griffin and Kyle Moore, that, you know, really showed flashes of brilliance. Griffin had that one game where he had three sacks. What do you think about the guys coming back on the defensive line?
Well, first of all, you're not going to replace Cedric Ellis, okay? Everybody says, well, we got to have another Cedric Ellis. Well, they don't come along often, okay? Quick, strong, leader, senior, the whole thing. So what you do, what you try to do, is you don't try to just replace Cedric Ellis. You try to get your four best defensive players on the field. And you mentioned a young man, I can't pronounce his name.
Feely Moala, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's time for him now to be a leader. He's going to be a senior this next year. He's played a lot of football. He's big. He's strong. He's made big plays. And he loves the game. So it isn't like he lacks experience. So I would pencil him in as a starter and a leader. Cedric Ellis, I'm not sure what you do there. Yeah, I don't believe that any freshman coming in is going to fill the spots. I think it's going to be, they have Casey, they have others that are coming in, but they're not going to fill the inside tackle spots. The inside tackles have got to have push. if you don't have push inside and if you can't slip a gap and free up or get penetration, you're not getting it done. And I don't think the experience and the freshmen coming in can step in and stop Virginia and stop Ohio State and stop some of these teams early. So I think in the spring what they're going to be doing with the defensive line, and I really believe Nick Holt and the defensive coaches and Coach Carroll, is they've got to find their four best combination players to run their defense. I'll tell you, they've got to do that. That even might be, and you won't believe this, that might even be putting Griffin inside. He's big. He's strong. Bulk him up. If you were to bulk him up to 275 the way he runs and put him on a guard, he might be unstoppable.
Yeah, people have talked about that, moving him around a little bit. That would definitely be a possibility. The other guy, we actually had a story about him up on the site today, Avril Spicer. You know, when Mike Patterson came in, no one really thought anyone could replace him, and then Cedric Ellis did. And, you know, some people think Spicer might be able to come in and not replace everything that Cedric Ellis did, but kind of grow into the type of player that can, you know, get quick off the line and shoot those gaps and disrupt things in the middle of the opponent's offense.
Well, I'll tell you, someone's got to do it, and Spicer's got that opportunity. It's a sophomore. He's going to be, a junior next year, and he should step up and be able to do that. But I'm just talking about finding your four best, finding a combination that works well together. Penetration, push, quickness on the outside. Griffin was great on the outside, but at times when I watched Griffin on the outside, he sort of played wild. He sort of played out of control. Not that he wasn't young, but he has great talent. And I can just see him going inside and the mismatches that he would put if he decided that he wanted to be a tuck or if he wanted to be a guy like the Giants guy inside with his height and his speed. The offensive line, you'd have a tough time blocking him. So I'm just saying that's a thought. I'm not saying SC's even thinking of doing that. I'm just saying that is a thought. Why? Because they've got some defensive ends who can play. Not a Jackson, but they've got some defensive ends that have some experience. Kyle Moore's coming back. He ought to be a player. I think it's time that Gerald Washington steps up. You know, he came as a defensive end. He's big and strong. He's older. He's going to be a senior. He's got to step up and get on the playing field. He's been there too long. It's time for him to earn his keep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he played tight end a little bit, switched over, I think switched back. If you look at him, we put some pictures of him on the site. He is jacked. I mean, he definitely passes the eyeball test, though. I think people are going to be, you know, anxious to see what he can do, you know, for this team. If he can come in and get some quality minutes and be part of that rotation at defensive end.
He's got to do that. And I tell you, this Michael Reardon, this young freshman kid, I tell you, he is quick. He is quick, and I think he's going to be a great offense or a defensive end. He's got the build of a defensive end. He was an offensive tackle. He's got the speed, the quickness. He'll learn. I think he'll really mature. And then with the incoming, I think, three great defensive ends, I really believe. Peck from Michigan, Horton from the Valley, and Jackson from the Valley. I'll tell you, those guys are going to be great players. Now, they can play on natural ability, as Griffin did last year. They don't have to, you know, play with the push of the inside tackles, which you need there. So I think if those guys come along, and if Moore comes along, and some of these other returning players come along, I think the defense at USC will be good. But I think the number one area of rebuilding is in the defensive front, the four down guys. But backers, don't worry about backers. Secondary, man, they've got some secondary players that can play. I think they've got to build the defensive line, and I think this spring they've got to feed those guys some nails.
Yeah, and it's Nick Perry, the kid out of Michigan. He looks really good. They stood him up at linebacker a little bit at the Army All-American Bowl, but it looks like he's going to come in and play defensive end. He had so many sacks his senior year, and he'll probably add some depth there and you know, really fight from the beginning to be part of that defensive line rotation. So, but you mentioned the linebackers. Let's look there. Keith Rivers, obviously a big loss. He's playing on that weak side, and you know, he's projected as a top 10 pick by some people. So obviously that's not easy to replace. Looks like Kaluka Maiava is going to come in and play for him. I'm not sure if Kaluka is going to be able to be 100% this spring. He had wrist and thumb injuries, but you know, he's looked good when he's filled in for Rivers in the past when he's been hurt. Cushing and Malaluga obviously are back. You know, they have a lot of experience coming back, and there was probably the deepest group last year, and they're going to add Chris Galippo and even more talent this year. What do you think about that group?
Well, I agree with you. I really think that that is a great group. And with Grippo coming back now, I think it's time for Luther Brown. I think it's time for Luther to earn his letter. I really do. I think it's time for him to step up. He hadn't had that many opportunities to play, but he's a big, physical, highly recruited player out of Lakewood High School. I think it's time for Luther Brown to step up. Is Clay Matthews back?
Clay Matthews is back. He looks great.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I like Clay Matthews.
Yeah.
I like Clay Matthews. He plays different positions. That's right. He's back, too. So when you look at Cushing and Matthews, and it's Michael Morgan runs so well, the kid out of Texas, I tell you, those are three or four great backers right there on the strong side. Malaluga, I don't have to tell you about him. They got to work with him, and I'll tell you what I think the backers have got to work with. Luther Brown has got to step up. Gallipo, it's time for him to tell everybody why he was the most valuable player in the Army game and get out there and challenge these guys and get hit and hit somebody. That's what linebackers do. And I tell you, on the weak side linebacker where Rivers played, every single game that Rivers got hurt, this young kid came in that you mentioned. This young kid came in from Hawaii. And I tell you, he swarmed all over the field. If you check his tackles, he had 8, 9, 10 tackles a game. He can run. He can hit. He's not a Rivers. He's not as big as a Rivers. But I tell you, he's a football player. And there's a difference in what a football player is or a guy that's playing football. And this kid loves football. I think he'd be a great one.
Yeah, and one of the guys you mentioned, Michael Morgan, a lot of people have asked questions on the Peristyle, the premium message board on uscfootball.com. He's been in the system 3 years now, and he just hasn't added that extra beef. You know, he's still a pretty, you know, thin kid. Have you seen players like that come in where you expect after the freshman year, we're going to put some weight on this kid and he's going to be unstoppable? And a guy like Michael Morgan, it hasn't really happened yet.
No, it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, he's looked at who's he playing behind. He's looked at a lot of those players, and he's saying, wow, I tell you, you know, I can do everything, and I'm not going to get on the field necessarily, maybe be a special teams player. But he's got to grow up. He's got to grow up. He's got to see it's now his time. He was a highly recruited player, a great player. He'll grow up and got to mature and have a great spring practice. It's time for Norton to have a talk with him. Sit him down and say, son, you came here to play football. You're a great football player. You know, we've got other great football players here. It's time you hit somebody. It's time you find out why you wear a face mask and why we recruited you to USC to win national championships and win championships with defense. And motivate him. I'm sure Coach Norton is doing that, and I'm sure Coach Carroll is doing that. And the kid has got to grow up. Some kids mature a little bit slower than others. He's a fine player. He's a great athlete, or he wouldn't have been recruited to USC.
Yeah, definitely.
So you got to bring him along. You got to mature him. You got to get him ready to play. You got to build confidence in him, and give an opportunity. And if you do that, then he sees that you care about him, and you really want him to be a part of the defense.
Yeah, you know, if he's there or not, it's going to be a really deep group. But just you'd like to see a kid like that who was highly recruited and is such an athlete. You can tell just watching him run how athletic he is, and try to get a little more weight on him and get him on the field a little bit more. But let's switch over to the secondary. They lose Terrell Thomas. Pretty much everyone else is back. Looks like Josh Pinkard's not going 100% in these offseason workouts yet, but he's running around a little bit. One of the guys that was hurt last year, Kevin Thomas, is back, and he's making all kinds of plays in these one-on-one drills and seven-on-seven. He's batting the ball down a lot, so he's a guy that could probably add some depth there. They do lose Vincent Joseph to grades. What do you think about the secondary group coming back as a whole?
Well, I think as a whole, it's a great group. I really do. You know, last year they had a great secondary group, but they had a lot of injuries in the secondary. This year, they were very unfortunate. Guys were getting hurt all the time and so on, and they had to move players around and start different people, and Wright got his shot. I really like Wright. I think he's going to be a great corner. Why? He loves to hit people. He loves to come up and make great support plays. Every game that Wright played in, he made what I call a bell ring. I mean, he would come up and smack somebody. He was a young player.
He had a huge one in Idaho, I think, on the little screenplay or something, just leveled that guy.
Brian, you're right, and he is a very aggressive player, so I think he's going to mature, add to that group. And when you look at that secondary group, you know, you've got Marshall Jones, too. I mean, he's a player that played last year, too, as a freshman. He's a kid that's going to be a great player.
Yeah, he's a great-looking kid, phenomenal athlete in great shape.
You're right, and Ellison is their better is there a better strong safety in the country? I don't know. Taylor Mays, Ellison, I mean, 1-2 back there, free safety, strong favorite safety, put Josh Pinkert in there. I'll tell you, Josh Pinkert might be the best athlete in the secondary.
Yeah, Pete Carroll said that before, that he was the best football player on the team, and for him to be out the last couple of years has really hurt them. Kevin Ellison, you mentioned, is he maybe the most underrated player on the team as far as the national recognition he gets for as being as phenomenal as he is?
I think he is. I'll tell you what, whenever you watch these stunts or you see hits or whatever, you see big plays or you see tackles, he's around the football every down. He's always around the football, and he's making big hits and covering the field. I think Ellison is an outstanding player. So, you know, in the secondary, I think Rocky Seto is going to have a great group to coach. I really do, and I think they're going to mature, and if they can just stay healthy. And how about Kerry Harris? I mean, he had a lot of playing time and it started. So the secondary, as far as in the spring, I think what they've got to work on is techniques a lot. I think they've got to work on man techniques. They got to work on their man coverage an awful lot. If you notice, towards the end of the year last year, they played zone early in the year when they went to man and they started blitzing a lot more. They became a little bit more successful defensively when they became more aggressive. But when you do that, you got to work a lot on man technique. So I see them this spring working a lot on man technique, a lot of one-on-one coverage, a lot of coverages working against the receivers. Because we said earlier last week when we talked about the offense, the receivers have got to get tougher. So what the defense can do is work against the receivers, smack them on the line of scrimmage, cover them man, and both sides of the football will get better. But the only way you can play man defense is practice man defense every single day. And man defense is the toughest defense to run routes on if you're a receiver. So if you go against great cover guys and you're a receiver, you'll get better too. So I think that's something that we'll probably see if they're planning on running a lot of man in the fall. You'll see a lot of more man work in practice.
Great. Oh, well, hey, Coach, I think we're out of time for this segment, but thank you again for your insights, learning more about football from the Godfather.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy, I really appreciate being a part of it, and I thank you for allowing me to break it down with you here in the huddle.
Yeah, and if anyone has questions for the coach, you can always email us, podcast@uscfootball.com. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk to Gerard Martinez a little bit about USA football recruiting. But thanks again for your time, Coach.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Peristyle Podcast with Ryan Abraham and the coach, Harvey Hyde.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
All right, Trojan fans, it's time to get up to speed with the recruiting blitz from Gerard Martinez.
With 8 of the Trojans' 10 commitments rated in the Rivals 100, USC has half of their 2009 class already accounted for. Next month, Rivals.com will release its top 250 rankings. National recruiting analyst Jeremy Crabtree discusses the movers and shakers among the nation's top junior prospects.
Well, I think the guy that I look at and looking at more and more is Patrick Hall. I mean, the kid obviously a tremendous, tremendous player, but he could potentially be a guy we need to look at pretty seriously for a five-star consideration. His tape isn't up on the site yet, but when we reviewed it, he was very, very impressive, and obviously a kid that gets an offer early from USC is a talented player, but when you look and see the way that he's able to go out there and do so many versatile things, whether it's offense, whether it's defense, whether it's for special teams, this kid just does it all. So I think you look at him as a guy that potentially could move up. You know, I'm not ruling out also that we might have a change at the top. I mean, obviously, you know what I think about Matt Barkley. I think the kid's a tremendous talent, one of the best quarterbacks we've seen come out of California the past 5 years. But there's definitely some competition for that top spot, and it's going to be some interesting debate because we've got further film on Jamarcus McFarland, the kid from Lufkin. You have to love what he one guy that's USC-oriented in the top 100 that could move up, I'd definitely look at Patrick Hall. He definitely has the potential to be at least a candidate for that five-star status.
And while camps and combines will further impact the recruiting rankings for next year's class, Crabtree doesn't see USC's strong start fading with further evaluation.
There's a reason why USC does a tremendous job each year. It's because they're able to handpick the top kids they want first and foremost in Los Angeles, and that's what they've done this year. You look at the kids that are coming their way. You know, we've already talked about Matt Barkley. We've already talked about Patrick Hall, but this class is so, so deep. You know, Randall Carroll, his tape's incredible. We saw him at the five-star academy in Anaheim, really liked him then. We got the tape, and it just shows why USC offered him a scholarship. You just go down the list. I mean, this group is very, very talented. The linebacker class already is going to rank up there as one of the best linebacker classes in the country. You know, Montez Burfitt, just a tremendous impact linebacker. Then throw in Chris Metcalf, who could be an outside linebacker, maybe safety prospect. And then we already talked about Marcus Simmons. You know, Marquis Simmons, he is a very good player, maybe a lot better than the other brothers that have Simmons brothers that have come out the past couple years. Everybody's pretty consistent on that idea that he is better. And then we, you know, look at Kevin Graff. I think Kevin Graff was a guy that we were very impressed with on film also. So I just keep looking at these guys, and gosh, I truly think that there's going to be some guys that are still going to stay in that top 100 mode, but some other guys I think could see some moving up. I don't see anybody really going down for anything like that at all. I mean, this is a very, very talented early group of Trojan commitments.
One of the highest-rated Trojan targets in 2009 is Hawaiian linebacker Mante Teo. Currently ranked as the nation's number 7 prospect, Teo received a written scholarship offer from USC last fall. That letter was followed by news that Pete Carroll would grant Teo's request to take a Mormon mission after his freshman year of college. In a recent interview, Manti recounted that episode of his recruitment.
Well, to be honest, I was kind of shocked. But when finally my dad got off the phone and he had a big smile on his face, and I asked him, what happened then? And he said, well, Coach Carroll agreed to allow you to serve your mission and hold your scholarship for you. I was like, hey, are you kidding? And he's like, no. And then he told me the whole story, and that's how I found out.
Look for our complete interview with Teo Thursday. Rounding out the week, USC sent scholarship offers to Lauderhill, Florida cornerback Brandon McGee, Wheaton, Maryland safety Jelani Jenkins, and Helena, Arkansas defensive tackle Eric Smiley. With your recruiting blitz, I'm Gerard Martinez.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. You just heard the recruiting blitz from Gerard Martinez, and we are joined on the phone by the same Gerard Martinez. How are you doing today, Gerard?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. From the blitz, sounds like Jeremy Crabtree and yourself think that the USC is putting together a really good class. One of the subjects you brought up was the Mormon missions, and I know you talked to Manti Te'o last night, and you talked to Xavier Sulafilo also before. Both of those guys are interested in missions. Has USC changed their policy on missions, and what do you think about that?
Well, they have. There was a few kids that have come through that are Polynesian kids that wanted to take missions that they discouraged them from, and I think at this point when you've got a player this is good as Manti Te'o, and Xavier Sulafilo is going to be right up there too. He's going to be one of the top linemen in the country. I think USC's, you know, they just kind of have to adjust it a little bit, and that's what Pete Carroll does really well. I think he adjusts, he's flexible, and maybe one of the differences, one of the things that's kind of changed their policy is the amount of actual transfers that USC's had over the past few years. I think they've kind of gotten used to bringing guys into the program and not necessarily having guys contribute right away. And this is obviously a different situation because you have kids that are coming in their freshman year, and then at age 19, they go away 2 years for their mission. They don't get to pick where they go. They could end up in Calgary. They could end up in Finland. They could end up in London. But they go away. Some of them are allowed to train more than others. I think that's kind of a case-by-case basis. But it is kind of a situation where they go away, and then they come back and they contribute. So I think USC being able to bring in some of the transfers they had, obviously Mitch Mustaine, Damian Williams, some of these guys that have come in and not contributed right away, I think it's maybe adjusted the thought process a little bit as to the program and recruiting and how that affects recruiting down the line.
But obviously it's a big difference between sitting out a year on the playing field and being able to train with team and work on the scout team to being in a third world country somewhere, who knows if you can even run or work out or do whatever.
Exactly. No, it definitely is. So, I mean, there is a difference, but I think that the transfers maybe, I think the bigger impact is kind of what your future recruiting looks like. You know, what are your need positions? Because you have guys that are away on missions for, you know, 24 months, 26 months, and they're not coming back until later. And you're thinking, well, you know, how does that affect 2000, not 2010, but 2012? And with transfers, that's kind of a similar thing, too. You have to kind of look ahead, and you've got a kid who sat out a year, and he's redshirted, but maybe he's a really good player like Mitch Mustaine or Damian Williams. Well, those guys could be leaving their junior year because now they have a redshirt year, or their redshirt sophomore year, I should say. So that way, I think it's kind of changed maybe the fluid motion of the recruiting process for USC and how they look at that down the line.
Yeah,
that
USC's recruited Polynesian kids obviously very well. Well, but, you know, we were talking before, I can't think of a kid that took a mission during the Pete Carroll era. Is it, it's just guys that just decided they weren't going to do that? Or how did that work?
You know, I don't know. Wanaka Yenga, to my knowledge, will be the first player to take a Mormon mission that I can remember, Pete Carroll, or even before that. It's just been a policy. You'd have to talk to the coaching staff in depth about why that policy has changed. At this point, I'm not really sure of that. And actually, you know, it's funny talking to Manti. I assumed that Wanaka Yenga was going to be like the first player to actually take a Mormon mission. But it sounds like Manti may have been the guy who changed this policy himself with his recruitment, because it sounds like Pete Carroll had discussed this with his coaches and discussed it with his father and actually agreed that Manti Te'o could take a Mormon mission before he actually let one of Kavienga take a Mormon mission. Now, obviously, Kavienga is coming in this year, so he will play this year, contribute this year, and then take a Mormon mission first. But in terms of, you know, the pioneer of this, the guy who got this policy changed, or I should say the one who kind of readjusted the thought process, was actually Manti Te'o.
All right. Well, so both those guys you mentioned, Manti Te'o and Sulafilo, are in your 10 of Troy that came out this week. Manti, I think, at number 2, and Sulafilo is down at number 5. Can you explain to the readers, what is the 10 of Troy? Is this the top 10 guys that USC's after that aren't committed yet, or how does that work?
No, the 10 of Troy is kind of, I always put it as a little bit of insight into the zeitgeist, the current topics that are hot, the guys that the USC fans are talking about. It's broken down into basically three factors. The need position kids, the kids that come in and they have interest in USC. I mean, obviously there's some great players out there that don't have interest in USC. Well, they don't make it. But also the buzz factor. You know, who are Trojan fans talking about? Who's the, you know, that's why Russell Shepherd got up there. Russell Shepherd was always looked at as a moderate long shot, not a guy that was probably going to go to USC and sign with USC. But when he got his offer from Pete Carroll, it blew up the peristyle. I mean, everybody was talking about it. People were talking about, you know, how does this change USC's recruitment with Matt Barkley? How does it change their philosophy offensively? Are they going to bring in a guy who's, you know, a running dual threat quarterback? And then the disbelief that he would be brought in as a quarterback and, you know, he'd probably be an athlete, probably play receiver. So it was one of those situations where Russell Shepherd, being a five-star guy, just caused a lot of excitement, even a little bit of controversy among a lot of posters, a lot of members.
Yeah, we talked about it last week on the podcast. You know, was he going to really come in and play quarterback? And, of course, Murphy's Law, the day, or maybe even just hours after you released the 10 of Troy.
Yeah, it was the day of the 10 of Troy release. He commits to LSU,
yes,
which was great. That was awesome. but hey, but you know, that's what happens. It's bing, bang, boom. And but with that said, it doesn't change that, you know, Russell Shepherd was still a very talked about recruit. And even when he committed to LSU, people were talking about him on the peristyle. So that's kind of what the 10 of Troy is. It's the hot board for USC. And it's a reflection more of what the fans are talking about than necessarily what USC is talking about or the recruits they have on their board. I think the target list that we put out monthly are a little more representative.
Okay, so up at the top of your 10 of Troy is Devon Kennard. He's another great kid, out of a five-star guy out of Arizona. What makes him be the top of the 10 of Troy when USC brought in so many defensive linemen in the class of 2008?
Well, for one, he's great. He's a great player. 24.5 sacks as a junior. Just a spectacular kid. He's one of those kids that's still a kid. He's a really sweet, really nice kid. And you see that potential for him to grow and to mature even more and become even a better player down the line. Some of these guys you talk to, it's almost like you're talking to your peers. You think you're talking to a 20-something-year-old guy, and you're thinking, wow, you know, how old is this kid? Well, with Devon, he's still a kid, and I think you still see there's a lot of potential, not even just athletically, but I think mentally and emotionally for him to mature and become even better. That excites a lot of people. Secondly, he's a Western region recruit. You've got to be able to lock down kids that are local, that are in the Pac-10 region. USC has done a phenomenal job of that year in and year out. This would be a continuation of that. This is a five-star kid that's in your region. You got to lock him down. And need being something else, you know, pass rushers, especially weak side guys, they don't come along all that often. Nick Perry, obviously, last year was a huge get for USC. They needed him because they have no depth along the defensive end position. And Kennard comes in at that position as well, and he's a guy that can get after the quarterback. And that's a value position. That's a money position. You look at the NFL draft, everybody's looking at that kid that can come off the edge. Everybody's talking about Chris Long. They're talking about Goldston that came out of early from Ohio State.
He blew it up at the combine, yeah.
Exactly. Those are big time. That's becoming a money position because if you can sack the quarterback, you can really adjust what the offensive scheme is. And you're talking about the Pac-10, and Pac-10 passes a lot. You've got a lot of quarterbacks that can do a lot of damage to defenses. If you don't have a pass rush, you're going to get eaten up alive in this conference. So a guy that is like Devon Kennard, he helps your secondary. He helps everybody. And I think kind of the final thought on him being number one, you got Everson Griffin there, who's just a physical freak. We all see the potential that he has, you know, that kind of flash of brilliance. But he's also 270-plus pounds at this point. I don't necessarily – I think there's a possibility that kid can move into being a three technique down the line in his career. Now, I don't know if he's going to stay there until he's a senior. You know, Everson's got a lot of talent. He could be a junior and then gone to the NFL. But if he grows much more, he could be a guy that's playing inside. And
yeah, I just talked in the last segment to Coach Harvey Hyde, and he mentioned the same thing, that you know, they when they were moving around the guys on the defensive line – he could see, you know, he's not saying that's going to happen, but he could definitely see Griffin go inside and kind of play that role that Cedric Ellis did.
Exactly. And that's, you know, I mean, he's really could be a spectacular three technique with his agility and his speed and quickness upfield. So that's, you know, that comes into play. And when you're recruiting, you got to think of those things. They're in the back of your head, and you want to be able to make sure that you have some backups. You have some guys that can contribute early. Devon Kennard is one of those kids. And he's a kid with NFL bloodlines as well. So he's just across the board. I think he and Tail as well. It's almost 1 and 1A. You know, Tail comes into even a more need position, if you will, because of the linebackers. He would come in and contribute even more. But, you know, that's where the mission kind of question comes in. Hey, he comes in as freshman, and then he's going to leave. And so, you know, how does that impact the whole recruiting process and how he contributes to USC down the line if he signs there? So both of these guys, regional recruits, very talented, very important to USC.
All right, one other guy that I thought was really interesting on the 10 of Troy, he comes in at number 10, Mr. Wood, the running back out of Oxnard. I'm wondering when this tailback hangover, I guess you could call it, is going to end for USC. They had so many guys. You couldn't recruit really anyone that's going to be a every down five-star tailback for the class of 2008. Are they going to be able to for the class of 2009, or are they still going to be have their hands tied pretty much because of all the talent they have on the roster?
Well, it's not a bad hangover to have when you've got, you know, Joe McKnight and C.J. Gable and Alan Bradford, and you've got five-star guys who are not even seeing the field.
Oh, yeah.
Last year, yeah, Darryl Scott, that made it tough for them to recruit him as a five-star guy, a local guy. But I think even Scott kind of looked at the situation and was looking to become his own man, kind of be the marquee player in a class, and Colorado fit him perfectly. With this year with Wood, Wood's a little different because, you know, I'm not convinced that he is an every down back. He's got the size, but I think he plays better as a guy that comes in and really can catch the ball well in the slot. He kind of does a lot of things really well, but I'm not sure that he does one thing great. And that's maybe the knock, if there is a knock on him. He ran for 2,600 yards last year, 42 touchdowns. Those are amazing numbers, but you're looking at how he fits in. What does he do? Is he dynamic? And you look at USC and the way they've recruited their running backs in the past few years, they have guys that seem to do certain things. You know, you've got Broderick Green. He's a monster. He's a power back. He's going to pound it. You've got Joe McKnight. He's the slot guy. He comes out. He could be split wide. He does things in open space. He's the speed guy. They always seem to kind of go in that direction. And when they need tailbacks, they recruit a bunch of them, and they get a bunch of good ones. So it's kind of hard. I think Wood is a guy that they can pass on. I mean, I don't know if they're going to. They offered him already, and they are recruiting him. But I don't know if he's the guy that they have to get. You know, Daryl Scott kind of in the same situation. Because when you look ahead, 2010, they got a kid out of San Diego, Mission Bay High School, 5'11", 190 pounds, named Baxter Dillon, Dillon Baxter. And Dillon Baxter is just, I mean, he's a phenom. He's a guy that's been starting since his freshman year. He was All-State his freshman year. So that's a guy that's kind of got that already, that aura about him, that hype that's coming out because he started early in high school and he's gone on. They've also got a kid named DJ Morgan from Taft who's already a world-class sprinter. I mean, he was at one of the camps at USC last year, and he came out, ran a, you know, something like a 4.4 flat as a 2B sophomore, which is kind of crazy to think about. And then he was going to fly out to Chicago for some kind of youth track meet. It was like a world track meet for all the junior nationals. So that's a kid with, I mean, legit track speed that's going to be coming out next year. When you look at it, you're going, well, Baxter, maybe he's that combo back. Maybe he's that guy like Mark Tyler. And then you look at DJ Morgan, and maybe DJ Morgan's that speed guy like Joe McKnight. And then all of a sudden, hey, the cycle, you know, it revolves. It's like, okay, now they're going to lose these guys, Joe McKnight and these guys. Well, there's another crop coming around. So that's kind of how
all of a sudden you have 10 scholarship tailbacks again. So.
Yeah, and that's exactly what they want. That's a great problem to have. 10 five-star guys on the roster at one position.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's finish up the segment with give us an update on some of the new offers that Pete Carroll has sent out. And can you give the fans at home a little insight onto why are so many offers coming out around this time when there's really not much football going on?
Well, the evaluation period is continued to change. I think the NCAA has kind of put an all-out assault on it, if you will. I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about Pete Carroll, who was a little upset, a little frustrated with not being able to go on to high school campuses for the May evaluation period. No college head coaches can go on campus anymore and do personal evaluations of high school talent. It's changing. The game is changing. Schools are recruiting earlier and earlier. Offers are going out earlier and earlier. So now that's why you see so many more out-of-state offers and in-state offers and so many more commitments before we even get to the May evaluation period. So that's pretty much the answer to that. The guys that they've given out some offers to this week, they've offered Jelani Jenkins, who's from Wheaton, Maryland, about a 6-foot, 205-pound, looks like a safety. He plays linebacker in high school. He's a fast kid. He's very explosive, gets to the point of contact very well. But he probably projects more as a strong safety in college. They've offered him. They also sent an offer out to Eric Smiley, who's a big 6'5", 280-pound defensive tackle from Helena, Arkansas. Now, he was actually originally from Seattle, went to Arkansas, and there was talk that he moved back to Seattle. That's kind of confusing still. I'm not really sure if he's in living in Arkansas at this point or if he's back in Seattle. But he's a big body, big kid. They just sent an offer out to him. And then last but not least, Brandon McGee got an offer. He's from Lauderhill, Florida. He plays quarterback, kind of an athlete. We saw him down at the San Antonio National Junior Combine where he was playing quarterback. But he also ran a 4.51 electronically on a very slow turf. And that –
yeah, he had one of the fastest times, I think, there, right?
Yes, he had one of the fastest times there. He's about 5'11 and a half, so he's got great size, got long arms, and he's a kid that approached us down here and said, hey, you know, I like USC. I have a little bit, you know, a little bit of interest in USC. You know, do a story on me. So we actually did a story a couple of weeks ago, and it was Zach, I think, called him up and talked to him a little bit, talked about how much he liked USC and how, you know, he would be interested in hearing more from him and taking a visit. And it obviously piqued the interest of SC, and they got in contact with him and obviously liked him enough to offer him a scholarship today. So, you know, he's a kid that is going to probably project at the corner position. Some schools say that he could play safety. I like him a little more as a corner. I think he's explosive, and like I said, he's got good height. And when you get a guy who runs a 4.51, he's got good height. Hey, that sounds like a Pete Carroll cornerback to me. So
yeah. So what you're saying is the coaches read the site. That's good news for us, I guess.
It is. And, you know, that's just the way it's got to be, though. You know, everybody's got to be in tune to the information. It's recruiting, and it comes out so fast. There's so much going on. It's daily. You know, it's not something that you just get updated weekly. It's something that happens every day. There's new offers to go out to kids, and their mind changes that quickly. You know, they get an LSU offer. You know, there's a kid that you're recruiting that gets an LSU offer. All of a sudden, wow, he's all happy about LSU, national champions. That's the way it goes. You've got to be on it day by day, and that's what we do at the site.
All right. Well, Gerard, great job as always. Thank you very much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Anytime, guys.
All right. We're going to take a break, and next up we have a new segment, the USC Campus Crawl. We're going to talk about some of the other sports besides football around USC, and I'll also give you an interview I did on Tuesday with another tailback in this big rotation, Broderick Green. So thanks again. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
Stay tuned for more of the Peristyle Podcast from Los Angeles, California.
Hey, USC Trojan fans, to get into the huddle of your Southern Cal Trojans, log on to uscfootball.com today for all the latest in Trojan football, basketball, and recruiting news. Ryan Abraham will give you an in-depth analysis, recruiting updates, and will answer your questions every day on the message board. So for all the latest in team and recruiting news on your USC Trojans, check out uscfootball.com, the officially licensed Southern Cal site of the Rivals.com network.
And now, welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, and it's time for the USC Campus Crawl, a new segment on the show. First, we're going to start with men's basketball. They had a tough weekend, going 1-1 in the desert. It was a really nice win they had over Arizona, but lost to ASU in a game that had some pretty huge foul discrepancies. Tim Floyd was pretty upset, and he actually filed a complaint with the Pac-10. But they can't worry about those games. They have to look forward. They play Cal Thursday, March 6th, followed by number 7 Stanford on Saturday, March 8th. Against California, they want to try and get some revenge for the loss they had up in Berkeley. They put it to them last time they played in Palo Alto, holding them to 46 points. So Tim Floyd's going to try and have to generate a little bit more offense against the Lopez twins there. Trojans have won 9 out of our last 13, and they're currently sitting number 4 in the Pac-10. They have an excellent shot of getting to the NCAA men's tournament, probably somewhere around in the 7 seed range right now. Women's water polo, they're currently ranked number 4, and they just come off wins over LMU and Cal State Northridge at home, and their home winning streak now is at 42 games. They do go on the road this weekend, playing number 3 Cal and Pacific up north in Berkeley and Stockton, respectively. So far, they've split the season series with Cal, who's currently ranked number 3, and as the Trojans ranked number 4, obviously it's a very important game, important match there. For men's baseball, they started out really strong, going 3-0 to start the season on the road in Florida, but right now they're sitting at just 5-4 after a couple straight losses to UCLA and then Pepperdine on the road. So they have one more game against Pepperdine Wednesday night. Then they have to go to Rock Hill, South Carolina for 3 games versus Winthrop. Women's tennis ranked all the way up to number 7, and they host the Washington schools this weekend. Both of those schools are ranked in the 30s somewhere. So women of Troy should be favored. They almost had a sweep up in the Bay Area. They had a nice upset of number 8 Cal, but then lost narrowly to number 6 Stanford 4-3. If they would have been able to beat Stanford, that would have ended a 47-match losing streak to the Cardinals. So it's a really rough loss for the women of Troy, but they're doing well so far. The men's volleyball team is currently ranked number 8th. Well, I'm not sure why, because they're 9-9 overall and only 6-7 in the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation. But they do play Lewis on Wednesday at the Galen Center. Then they have to go up to Cal State Northridge and take on the number 3 Cal State Northridge team on Friday. So if you have any questions, you can always email us at podcast@uscfootball.com. Right now, we're going to play a little interview we did with tailback Broderick Green. He's a redshirt freshman, a big guy. A lot of people had questions on the message board about him. He said he told me he was about to 235 right now. Probably will try to play somewhere between 225 and 235. Some people have speculated that he would end up trying to play fullback. He told me that definitely was not the case. Okay, we're here with tailback Broderick Green. How's everything going today with these workouts?
It's pretty good. You know, it's fun getting back into it.
What do you think of the tailback rotation this year? I mean, you were redshirted last year. Yeah. What are your goals trying to get in there, break it in there? I mean, trying to be in that big back?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, working hard, you know, trying to learn all my stuff, you know, getting help from the guys and, you know, trying to help them too, you know, and just trying to all come together, you know, as one. And I'm trying to get in the mix this year.
What's the hardest part of learning to play tailback?
I say the blocking schemes, but the running stuff is easy. You know, a lot of it's easy. It's just, you know, you got to take time and look at it.
Do the coaches look at blocking as an important factor that could be if two guys have a similar running style, they run, one guy blocks better, they're going to get more playing time?
I'm not sure because, you know, they look at everything. You know, they don't just look at how you block and how you run. You know, they look at the whole package. So, you know what I'm saying? It's all about competition and, you know, how well you do. So,
how are you feeling after the Carlisle workouts from this winter, and what are you up to weight-wise?
Oh, I'm good. I know for a minute I struggled. I was last in a lot of the sprints, and, you know, I just felt so sloppy from being off, you know, for so long in a boot and, you know, coming back. But I know my weight, I was up to 240 for a minute, but I'm down to 235, and I'm just trying to get back in shape by spring.
You get to go back home at all? You miss being back there, back home in Arkansas?
Yeah.
When do you get to go back home?
I don't really know. I've been trying to think, you know, pretty soon, probably spring break.
Is it nice having guys like Damian and Mitch here that are from the same state? Or?
Yeah, it's cool. I like it.
Do you guys get together off the field and stuff?
Sometimes, you know, whenever we don't have tutoring or anything like that. So.
Now, one of the positions that doesn't have a lot of depth, tailback does. Fullback doesn't. Do they ever talk to you about getting some snaps at fullback? Maybe not full-time, but just playing there at all?
Nah. I told him I want to be 100% running back. So size doesn't mean a thing. I can show him.
So you got eight guys at tailback and one scholarship guy at fullback, essentially. It doesn't matter. Yet.
Doesn't matter.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can now download the podcast directly to your iPod. Just search for Peristyle Podcast the next time you log into iTunes.